I just want guys that I can trust. I could care less what you know about X's and O's. I want somebody that I can trust and somebody that has a personality that the kids can relate to.
On today's episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Coach Eric Flannery, the longtime head coach at St. Edward's High School in Cleveland, Ohio. A 1990 St. Ed's graduate, he returned to take the program over as a young head coach in 1996 and has since led the program to multiple state championships and making St. Ed's a national powerhouse. His teams are known for their toughness, discipline, and consistency year after year. Coach Flannery has also been heavily involved with USA Basketball, contributing to youth national teams and development camps. His coaching experience extends beyond the high school level, and his leadership has impacted players and coaches across the country. Coach Flannery is well-respected for his ability to develop both talent and character in his program while also maintaining a strong culture over the years. In this episode, we talk about the standards he learned in his experiences with USA Basketball, his process for finding a new assistant, and his advice to any young coaches out there on how to be the best coach that you can be. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Eric Flannery. Dr. Dish Basketball is revolutionizing basketball training with the number one selling shooting machine in the world. Our innovative systems are the only training solutions that deliver more reps, motivation, and fun, empowering coaches and players to elevate their game faster than ever before. Featuring advanced analytics, immersive game-like features, and an easy-to-use interface, our state-of-the-art shooting machines are the preferred choice for progressive teams worldwide. Welcome back, coaches, and thanks everybody for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. Our special guest today is the longtime head coach for St. Ed's High School in Cleveland, Ohio, Coach Eric Flannery. Coach Flannery, welcome to the podcast.
Doug, Alan, I appreciate you having me on here. Like we said beforehand, it's been way too long, so I'm not going to bust your chops anymore on that. But I do appreciate you having me on. I can't believe my son got on a podcast before I did, but I'll let that slide.
No, thank you, man. Coach, it's great to see you again. And how many years is this at St. Ed's coming up for you?
Believe it or not, Alan, this is going to be year 30 as the head coach at St. Ed's, and wow. 36 altogether. Wow. I'm getting old. But seeing legends like yourself and getting back to catch up with guys like you is an honor. It's an honor.
I don't know about the legend. I don't know about the legend part, but we're as old as we want to be. So
yeah, that's so true. So true.
Yeah. But now great to see you again. And thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
Now, the great thing about your experiences too is, one, it's a lost art. I feel like being a head coach for so long at one spot, especially nowadays, modern day, somebody who's staying and consistent. You graduated from St. Ed's, took an assistant role at St. Ed's, and went on to college just to go to college, Cleveland State, so right around the corner, but then took over the head coaching position, and you've been running it since. And I know you have a ton of different experiences outside of that with Jordan Brand, a member of the USA Basketball. I know you've coached the U16, U17 teams. But just going off of all of that, you've had some great experiences. But the first thing I want to talk about is just taking over that first. Now, if we're thinking back here, I know for a minute, taking over that position initially as a head coach, as a young head coach, talk about just the first initial steps going into that. I know you've been tenured there already, so at least you knew what was going on. But talk about the taking that position over early on.
Yeah, my story is probably a little bit different than maybe your average high school coach out there. And as you mentioned, I went to Cleveland State, but that's not how it all started. I started as an accounting major. I went away to a Penn State Barron, a D3 school, to play basketball. I was there for, gosh, maybe 3-4 weeks. Was in love with my wife, my girlfriend at the time, who turned out to be my wife and was a little homesick. I came home and I was going to play at John Carroll with the legendary Coach Moran. And my high school coach at the time just asked, while you're back, would you like to help out with coaching until you get enrolled in John Carroll and what have you? And believe it or not, it was almost instantaneous. I fell in love with coaching. I was like, man, I know my basketball career isn't going to go much further as a D3 player. And I decided to enroll in Cleveland State, decided to continue coaching. I worked in a factory downtown Cleveland I try to remind my kids that I work 2-3 jobs while coaching, while going to school, and just earning my way through it. And fortunate or unfortunate at the time, I had five different head coaches in a 5-year span at St. Ed's while I was an assistant. So one, I moved up the ranks rather quickly because I was there. I was a mainstay person. I went from assistant freshman to assistant JV to head freshman to head JV all within 4 years. And then the coach got fired halfway through the year in 95, 96. I was 22 years old at the time. They named another person as the interim head coach just because he was older and had been around a while. And we made it to the Final Four. And I was his assistant when we made the run. And so now I'm a 23-year-old, still struggling to graduate from Cleveland State, trying to get my degree. And they decided, they had a big committee, all of this stuff. We had some talent. You may not remember Doug, but I know Alan does. We had Steve Logan, who went to Cincinnati. Sam Clancy went to Southern Cal. Steve Lepore went to Northwestern. We had a loaded roster, and they were only sophomores, and we took them to the Final Four. Well, those kids kind of went to bat for me as being the head coach. They wanted a young guy. They knew I was going to be there a long time. The school itself was going through this big transition of having so many coaches in so many years, and they wanted some stability. So one of the big things they asked me was, like, do you plan on being here for at least the foreseeable future? And I was like, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Of course.
That's my dream. You're 23 years old. You got some talent. You're going to be a head coach. And for me, it was a no-brainer. I went through the interview process. We had 50 or 60 people that applied just because it was such a good job at the time. I was fortunate enough to get it. So I always give credit to our president, our principal at the time. They were younger guys, and they took a chance on me. They always come back and say they were the ones that started my career and gave me a chance to do this. I would have never guessed that I would be here 30 years later and still be the head coach at St. Ed's. But that's how it all started, and probably right place, right time, with all the changes that were going on, and just happened to have some really good players when I started out.
That's incredible, man. This is literally, you talked about your story being unconventional or different. Everyone that comes on here has a different and unconventional story. Yeah. That's what makes these pods so good, because we were just telling, Doug and I were talking yesterday, these pods are like snowflakes, man. There's no two that are alike. And we do talk basketball on here from time to time, X's and O's and philosophies and things like that. You can get that stuff a lot of places. You can click YouTube and in 5 seconds, you can pull a European EuroLeague clinic up. But you can't get what you just said anywhere. That's why these stories are so cool. I think you've actually, if somebody had to nickname you, you're like the Mark Few of Ohio high school basketball. Because
that's a hell of a compliment.
No,
are you saying I don't win much? Or
no? No. That
wouldn't matter.
You're sure of that for sure. Why I say that is you personify the phrase that he uses, don't mess with happy.
Correct.
Because I know there's been opportunities, and we don't, over the times you had the chances to go other places, but that phrase, don't mess with happy, he uses that a lot, and you've personified that. And so I guess you can go back and see those two guys or the guys that hired you and say, hey, you want stability? I'm going into year 30 now. So
exactly. 100% right.
You got your stability.
You know what, Alan, you bring up some great points too. And I don't know how this podcast is going to go in which direction. I don't want to hijack it by any means, but it's about relationships. Everybody's story is different. To your point, especially in today's day and age, the X's and O's are out there. Like, anybody can draw plays and find plays. It's just about everybody has a story, right? And the opportunities that I've had because of the success that we've had here at St. Ed's, I've had an NBA offer, I've had some college offers, and it always came down to what is important to you and really having a realistic perspective of the grass is not always greener. And if you have something that is really good and you love it, why do you want to change it, whether it's for a short-term flame of success or fame? Or do I need to feel better if I'm a college coach over a high school coach or an MBA? No, I personally do not. And I think that is part of why I've been here a long time and probably why we've been successful, because I treat this program like a college program. And we run it that way. And I have some comfort, obviously. There is some, and we can get into that a little bit about getting a little stagnant sometimes and getting a little comfortable or too comfortable. But I have something really good here. And I'm so appreciative of the people here at St. Ed's. It's a great place to work. It's a great place to be. And to your point, you can't always be looking at something better, right? You got to, what's the old adage? Be where your feet are, right? I always try to tell our guys that I'm where my feet are. I'm 100% in, and I love doing what I'm doing. So I appreciate you saying that.
No, 100%, man. No, you treated that place like it's the only job on the planet. Yeah. And the beauty of it is you've been able to mix in the USA stuff to, because that's a way to grow and stretch yourself outside of being in St. Ed. So you've been able to step into these temporary experiences from time to grow and stretch you a little bit and create some challenges within what your Absolutely. Normal stretch is. Yeah. Good stuff, man.
And I want to say too, I like going off of the USA stuff, could you talk about how those transpired? Because I'm sure a lot of it probably had to do with success and then obviously making connections throughout being the head coach at Ed's. But like the main thing too is, and I'll be the first one to say, I'll take it on the chin right now. I was the young coach trying to get my name out there, and you're always trying to grow and you try to reach out. And of course, being yourself, great, phenomenal coach with a great background, I was always trying to get in with USA. And I know I joked around before, but like bothering you a little bit, but at the same point, I think that's what a lot of kids, and that's exactly how kids' minds, that's why I know it well, is because I was one of them at the point where you're like, you just try to do all this outreach, try to find anybody, and you realize that's not necessarily the way it's supposed to go about. But just talk about like the involvement with USA, first off, how that transpired, but then just ultimately what it blossomed to as well.
Yeah, first of all, Doug, you were never annoying or anything like that.
I know.
You did what you were supposed to do. I don't want to ever, and I think Alan can appreciate this too. I'm at the point of my career and life where I enjoy doing this and helping other coaches as much or more as coaching my own teams. Having local coaches or people from around the country just reach out and ask for conversations, whether it's talking about X's and O's, but more importantly, talking about how to build a program and develop a program and do those things. I love that. And I don't care if it's my arch rival. I don't care who it is. As a matter of fact, I have a local coach that reached out 2 days ago and we're meeting next week. We're going to sit down and have coffee. And he's been around for a while. And he's just, hey, I respect what you do. I've never reached out, but that's how it starts. Long story with USA basketball, but I'll try to keep it short because you have so many stories when you do certain things, but I'm not going to share who I know, but I knew somebody. And so we go back to relationships, right? USA basketball 22, 23 years ago was not nearly what it is today. Back then, it was two guys, Jim Tooley and Sean Ford, who are still there, were basically working out of a warehouse in Colorado Springs. And that was USA basketball. They had a committee of guys. They were working with the Olympic team, but they wanted to start developing the kids at a younger age. And that's what happened was they decided to put a committee together of high school coaches, whether you high school, different backgrounds, and a guy named Boo Williams, if you remember Boo Williams from the Peach Jam and other things in North Carolina. Long story short is I knew somebody. They basically, he was on the National High School Federation and he knew me and I was a young coach and he's just, hey, Flan, I nominated you for this USA basketball thing. I really don't know what it is. Because you were like one of two guys we nominated, I got in. And I was then on a committee of six guys who started USA basketball. And we would, back then, we would bring out juniors in high school. And we called it the youth development, or I don't even remember, Hoop Festival. I think it might have been what we called it. And we would just bring out like the top 48 juniors in the United States. We'd work them out. We'd scrimmage. We'd play. A couple of years later, we started inviting some other countries like Mexico and Canada to come in and scrimmage and do some stuff. And it eventually turned into these U16, U17 world games that I was fortunate enough to win 5 gold medals with and start coaching some of those. And, you know, you always use that stuff as fodder when you're with your players or with campers and stuff like that. Hey, my first group at USA Basketball was LeBron James, Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony. That was the first group of guys I ever coached, all the way up to Cooper Flagg and some of these guys this past couple of years. I've taken a little bit of step away from it for the last 2 years. I told them it was my choice. I said, again, I think other people and younger people need to step in here and get this experience because I've been doing it for 20 years. I'm the second longest standing person or was with USA Basketball at the time, and just had so many great experiences with it. And when you talk about just being lucky, making the right connection, as you guys know, that's just as good as being extremely smart and hardworking and all of those things. You need to make those connections. And kind of full circle back to you, Doug, you got to make those reach outs and you got to reach out to people. Otherwise, they may never know that you're interested or what you're all about. So I would never feel too bad about reaching out to people because that's the way it works.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you said that because while we try to echo what you said about being present, being where your feet are on this pod, we talk about it all the time. And guests come on and talk about that all the time. There is a place and space for being aggressive in terms of reaching out. I think when one supersedes the other, that's when you can run into maybe some challenges, right?
Great
if
point.
You're more concerned with the reach outs versus reaching in where you're at, that can now become an issue. Whereas if you're focused on what you're doing and pouring your heart and soul into where you are, and then when you have your free time or your own space to reach out to people that are in the places that you eventually want to be, then I think that's the healthy balance. I think when one takes over the other, then that's when the challenges can kick in.
You're not going to be successful, Alan, if you're looking, always looking, right? If you're trying to look for the next thing or the next best thing, you're not going to be successful probably anywhere, because that's probably what you're always going to be doing.
One of the things that I noticed recently, and I think it was me and Mage actually talking, we were joking around the other day, somebody's hiring for a position and somebody has, a bunch of younger coaches have reached out about the position. And what they've said is, yeah, it's probably a spot that I would come for a year or two and then I'd be able to get out of there. And then it's just, that's the one thing that, yeah. And I'll be the first one to say, when I first got out, yeah, I was probably one of those kids saying the same thing. But like looking back on it, if anybody's listening to this, do not say that. And if you are thinking it, do not put it out on the earth. Because especially what that's doing is it's telling the head coach, I'm going to come, I'm going to use you for a year or two, I'm going to learn, then I'm going to get out and try and use you as a stepping stone. Yep. So exactly to your point, like, make sure when you go somewhere, you're 100% in. You're not just going there thinking of what's next.
The amazing thing with that, Eric, is my friend was interim head coach at a job, and he had guys calling him, it's a D3 job. He had guys calling him about the job saying, yeah, it sounds like a good spot. I think I could come there and flip it in a year or two and then move on. And they didn't know that, one, this guy was an alum of that school.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also the interim coach. And he's also interviewing for the job himself. So he's hearing these guys say this. And he's getting warm now. Like it's like talking about somebody's kid when they're saying this.
100% right.
And so the beauty of the story, he ends up getting the job himself. And so it was like it was literally a fairy tale ending of how it went down. But yeah, we're in such a fast track world, and I like to say all the time, and the world went to hell when McDonald's went to two drive through lanes, right? Because ultimate patience just went out the window. It's like the suggestion
box got it faster, right?
The suggestion box just finally blew up to the point where we give up. Let's just give the people what they want. But there's just something to be said for staying the course and hanging in there. And like you said, because you never know.
So I got to ask, going back to the USA and Olympics, is there anything that you have learned from those experiences, being able to work with those top-tier coaches, top-tier players, that you are able to take back to St. Ed's and utilize maybe in practice? Or is there anything that you have learned from those experiences to bring to St. Ed's?
The list is too long to say. I'm coaching with the best coaches in the country. I'm coaching with guys around the world, internationally. You're watching them play. So from an X and O standpoint, I know that's not a huge thing, but I've learned a ton. Offenses, defensive philosophies, whether it's a simple trick or saying or something that maybe never clicked with me. Going back to my beginning days, I think one of the advantages I had was I had those five head coaches that I worked under before I became a head coach. And I learned something different from everybody. And I try to tell young coaches this too. You may not like what you're listening to or seeing, and you might not agree with it, But the longer I've been in coaching, you take those things and you still write them down. You still remember them and you put them on a shelf because someday it may click that, oh, now I know what that guy was talking about or doing. And I have so many of those stories and reasons why I just listen to everybody, right? I'm just probably, again, fortunate, lucky that I got an opportunity to work with some really successful and good people, number one. But one of the biggest things I learned that kind of changed my coaching career and philosophies and all of that stuff, it's something that is common today, but wasn't 25 years ago, and that was standards. When I got to USA Basketball, I didn't know what standards meant or were for coaching, right? I had rules like every other coach back in the day. If you're late for practice, you're going to run a 10-60 or you can't start, or if you miss practice, whatever, right? We all had those rules, kind of 1 through 20. This is what you have to follow. And as you get through coaching, you realize, especially at a place like St. Ed's, we have kids that come to school that can walk to school. They live in Lakewood. We have kids that take 3 forms of transportation to get here every day, with 2 rapids and a bus. And why do I have the same rules for these kids that have different backgrounds and different things? So Don Showalter, who's the legendary USA guy and from Iowa, who became a really close friend of mine, he introduced me to standards. And he just said, you have to have things that you as a coach are, you know, what's important to you? What are your standards? What do you live by? What do you expect from your players? And we had those for USA Basketball, and I brought those home with me back in 2001, 2002. And every year we go through those standards. They change a little bit from year to year, but it's made my job so much easier because when you bring a kid in now, when he screws up or does something you don't like, you just talk about, hey, what's our expectation? What is our standard? Our standard's to be here, to be on time. So instead of now you can't play or start or you're doing those things, you talk about why were you late? What's going on? Because they all have, maybe there's a good reason. Maybe his car broke down. Maybe he didn't miss the bus. So it changed my thinking so much about from the kid's perspective and so much about treating people. I don't know what's the term again, treating them the same, but not fairly. Because like I tell my kids all the time and I tell my players, like, I love my 4 kids all the same, but I like them differently on different days. I like my players differently for different reasons, but I love you all the same, whether you're guy 1 or guy 15. And that's where standards come in. Like you got to treat them all the same, but there are different things or reasons why people act or do certain things that they do. Standards was really, to long answer shorter, standards was the biggest thing that I learned from USA Basketball that really changed my thinking and philosophy on coaching.
I want to ask something else off of the USA stuff. Yeah. What did coaching great players teach you? Because obviously you've had some great players there, but then when you step into a gym, like some of the guys you mentioned when you guys first started, which, you know, probably would have been around 02, 03 when, you know, LeBron and Melo and those guys were really young. What did coaching great players teach you? Because people would say, oh, Mage, you been lucky enough to coach this great player, that great player. I'm like, they coach me too.
Correct. Yeah. You learn so much from them. But
oh my God.
But I will say this, I think, and this may go back to one of the reasons why they would always bring me back with USA Basketball. I never treated them any different than anybody else. And I was never and never have been in my own little naive world. I've never been starstruck. Like I bought LeBron James lunch on the way there at McDonald's. And if I see him nowadays, I just tell him you still owe me lunch with interest from whatever. But I never, like one of the things to your point, like that I brought back is they still do the same drills that you do. They still work the same way you work. Some of these guys might work a little harder. That's the separator. And we all know the biggest separators is God-given talent, ability, and size. So the difference between Carmelo Anthony and one of my players is he's 6'8". He's athletic as all get out. But he's doing the same things that we're doing. And he might understand how to play a little bit better. So let's point those things out when we're in practice. Or this is, how do you want to get to this level? Obviously, it's work ethic. But also understanding like what your limitations are and where you're at. And these kids, as the 20 years have progressed, it's gotten a little different, like a little harder. The one thing I love about USA Basketball is when we put our rosters together, we bring in character as like rule number one. So I've dealt with the most talented kids in the world, and we've cut 70% of them to make a roster. And like, I go to a Cavs game and I think I cut three of those guys to make a USA team, right? And those guys probably hate me. They probably like, that's the SOB that cut me for, but that goes back to the standard of what you're doing. So there are separators at every level, right? There's separators everywhere, whether it's talent, whether it's size, whether it's work ethic. But that's what I learned, is I try not to treat my guys any different or treat them any different. And to your point, Alan, I've learned a lot from them, because one of their separators is their understanding of how to play. And you have to be able to allow. I went from a guy that controlled like every possession early in my career, like running the flex and running sets, to you got to let the guys go. You got to let the horses run. You got to let them play. And I think they taught me a little bit about that. Oh, shit, this guy could create some shots on his own. I have to be okay and put my ego aside and let him do it.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love that, man. Yeah, and but then again, that gets back to a standards thing, right? Like, yeah. Offensively, you talk about, it sounds like over the years you flowed from sets to concepts.
Correct.
Right. And so concepts are like a freeway. You got guardrail here. You got a guardrail here. You got lanes. Mm-hmm. And as long as you let's stay in the speed limit, we're good. We keep the wheels off the shoulder, we're good. Other than that, let's roll.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think to that point, Alan, I get this question a lot from other coaches, especially around Ohio, because we have been really successful at the end of the year. We've been 26 straight district championships, which the next closest is like five, that's insane. Right? So we've had success. But one of those successes, and I put this on is, and again, don't get me wrong, I know how fortunate I am to have players and guys, and I get it. So when somebody says, oh, hey, you are at a private school, you cheat, whatever. Yeah, probably. But the difference is we teach every year the same. We teach the concepts for a while during the season. And I don't care about necessarily winning and losing. I care about my guys learning how to play the game and learning how to play together. And to your point, so you teach those concepts, you figure out who can play. It might take 10 or 12 games. And in Ohio, you're only playing 20 or 22 to get ready. And then as the season progresses, then we start controlling it a little bit more and a little bit more. So come tournament time, yes, they know how to play. They play together. And I allow some of that. But I also now know, hey, if I want X guy to take the ball or shoot the ball, he's going to take the ball and he's going to shoot the ball. And we're going to run something for that guy. So I kind of change as the year goes on and develop it from concepts into taking those concepts and putting it into your philosophy as a coach with that team.
And at the high school level, do you use, I know a lot of high schools probably don't have the resources, but St. Ed's, I'm sure, might be different. Do you use a lot of analytics and a lot of statistics, or is it more just this guy is good from these shots or these spots?
So great. I'm as technologically illiterate as it comes, right? And I make no bones about it. I personally am not a huge film guy. Like I'll watch it. I take all the stats after the game. I watch every game, but I get bored. Like I know what I see for the most part, and I'll show it. And I have assistants for a reason. Like they're really good. But I have a nephew, Tim Smith, who played for me back in 98 on a state championship team. And he's a nerd. Like he is. And he's been doing analytics before analytics were popular for us. So we literally have almost 20 years or so of data that we follow and that he gives me. Again, long story short, high school basketball is harder with analytics because there's only a small window, right? So to be able to use analytics after 5 games or 10 games is not really efficient. But come game 18, 19, and 20, he will hand me a list, like a 20-page report of this is what each player is. These are the rotations that are good. This is the offense that's working, defense that's working. It's insane. And I would tell them all the time, you better make this as easy for me to read, and easy for me to follow. And it does change a little bit about how I think and how we approach things come tournament time. And it does. I don't say I coach through analytics. We did have, I guess a great example would be I'll get the year wrong. So I think it might have been Sean's senior year. We went to a concept of all layups and all threes. And that was it, right? Because analytics said you want layups, you want to get to the free throw line, and you want kick out threes. So we took it to the extreme, and you're not going to believe me when I say this. We took it to the extreme that we only took three non-layups or threes all year for 26 games, three. And all three of them were buzzer, like they had to shoot them. And to our point, the first scrimmage we had that year, I remember to this day, it was like 10 minutes or 5 minutes into the first scrimmage of the year. And we had a kid that pulled up and shot a mid-range shot. And I never called timeout. I never in scrimmages. I called timeout. I went on the floor. I pulled them. I brought the team in. And I said, fellas, if we're going to do this, we're going all out. Like, we are going to do this. And from that point on, these kids, like, and it was the easiest year I ever had coaching, because you didn't have to tell kids, hey, that's a bad shot or that's a good shot. They were taking the shots that they knew that they were supposed to take. Our guys that couldn't shoot threes, they had to shoot threes, because we said, if you don't shoot them, they won't guard you. So you got to shoot them, whatever. It was fun to coach. It was fun to play. I think we overachieved big time that year. But it's not for everybody. And sometimes they figure it out. We've taken that concept and played with it over the years about the getting to the rim and shooting threes type stuff. And a lot of that all goes back to analytics.
Yeah, no, I love that, because you still have the, at the end of the day, you're a trust your eyes guy.
Yeah, 100%.
And conversation we've had out here before, I think I can't remember who it was, Doug, but we basically were like, okay, analytics is a great tool, but it's not maybe the solution.
Correct.
So you have to use it as a tool to help you get to a solution, but not the solution itself.
Trust me, Alan, if we were 0-4, 0-5, I would have thrown it all out the window. We do get in some arguments. There's no question. When he'll give me the analytics and he'll be like, hey, you should be doing this. And I'm like, sure, your numbers say that, but that's not what I see every day in practice. And that's not what I feel is right. And as the head coach, I'm going to do what I want anyways when it comes down to all of that stuff. But I will say we do use it. We do use it a lot, but we use it more as a guide than anything else.
And I got to say, too, the first thing I thought of is you mentioning your assistant doing all the analytics. Is that something you never asked for that, right? That's just something he brings to you. So right there is a foolproof way of saying, if you want to make your head coach better, you want to be better as an assistant. You just gave somebody a full breakdown of exactly how to do it, right? And that's just one way. There's 100 different ways that you can find it.
That is a great way to, yes. He approached me, heck, I didn't know what analytics were. And but I have guys, I have what I call a film guy. I actually have two of them now. Their main job is breaking down film and scouting. I got the analytics guy. I got a guy that works on or focuses on player development. I got a guy that focuses on. So again, I do have advantages. And one of the things that I have, and I know this might be a question that you asked or wanted to ask about hiring guys and hiring people. Okay. Again, I'm very fortunate. I have people, again, reach out quite a bit to be on the staff, but we don't have a lot of change over here. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's not. I had some tough conversations this year. We changed or removed two or three of my coaches who I just thought were a little bit complacent, right? They've been here a long time, and it's just now's the time, and I got to look out for our program and bring in some younger guys, which we did. But here it is. I need to trust you, and I will probably never – I shouldn't say never, because this is hard. This is easier for me, and I get it for other coaches. But I need to know, and going back to your guys, when we talked about it earlier, about guys wanting to come for a year or two and just help out and do whatever, and I want people that are all in. And it's okay if you want my job down the road because you want to stay here because I'm going to be here for a long time and you want it in 20 years, that's fine. But I just want guys that I can trust. I could care less what you know about X's and O's. I want somebody that I can trust and somebody that has a personality that the kids can relate to. And I don't care if you're 20 or 70, right? You need to be somebody that I can have a good conversation with, that I'm comfortable with. Not somebody that's overbearing, that's saying, hey, I really want to work. I want to do this. That's great, but you're probably going to come in here and think you're going to change things, and that's not going to happen, right? So you want people that are humble. You want people that are like, hey, I just want to learn. I just want to be a part of it. I will do whatever needs to be done. And that's a good starter for guys that want to come in. You don't need to tell me your resume so much. You need to tell me what you're willing to do and be a part of. And that's really the difference. And I think the guys that have been around me, I tell this all the time. We always talk about family, but you really got to act it out. You got to believe in it. You got to live it. And so I do have my other son, PJ's on staff. My brother's been on staff for 20 some years. I have teammates that are on staff, former players that are on staff. I think we have 13 coaches and 11 of them are graduates of St. Ed's. who have played here or played for me. You keep it in the family and you understand. That's not to say that I would never go out. It's not to say that you can never come here if you weren't an Eds grad or whatever. But I need to be comfortable with you if I'm going to entrust you with the kids in our program. And when it's, I understand this because Sean went through it being a new coach at Walsh. Like, he's living in a place where he doesn't know a lot of people and he's trying to get his buddies to come up and help him from up here. And it's, who wants to drive an hour to be an assistant freshman coach? So it's hard, right? And you got to find good people, right? And I just told him the same thing. You don't need to worry about their basketball background. You just need to worry about what type of people they are. And if they're willing to help you and they're good people, that's a start. And I think you can always teach them as you go along some things that you need to know.
Yeah, no, I saw a quote, I don't know, it was Instagram or somebody said, I don't know if it might have been, I can't remember who it was, but they said, you can occasionally end up in a good deal or you can occasionally end up in a bad deal with good people. Things may not just go well or turn out, but it's almost impossible to get a good deal with bad people.
Yeah, great. That's a great line. Yep.
And that's we were talking about coaching earlier. That's honestly where I'm at right now. If another opportunity pops up, the people are the whole thing, man, just because it's hard enough to beat the other team by 1 point. Like, winning is hard, period. So why not enjoy the chase along the way and feel good about pulling into the facility parking lot every day versus sitting in your car for 10 minutes and you're like, God, I got to go in and sit across from a student in a meeting again.
People matter. Yep.
Yeah. And people you're not going to find people that care more about St. Ed's than the guys you have. Like, their care factor is just going to be a little bit higher than maybe someone else's that maybe hasn't been through there and left their blood, sweat, and tears in the gym. Yeah, that's good, man. Got the mafia, St. Ed's mafia, man.
Yes, we do.
I know.
Got a lot of made guys on that staff.
Sean's been throwing hints at me the last couple of weeks. Yeah, if you ever come back to Cleveland, I could use somebody to work with my bigs. I'm like, I see what you're doing. I appreciate it. All right. Yeah. I said, hey, I'll never count it out. You never know. But
you're crazy not to. Yeah,
I think he asked me to get a plug for that too. Tell Doug to get his butt back to Cleveland. there's my plug.
That's right.
And Alan, don't hesitate. Maybe you move back, Alan. It's never yet at a high school level. Maybe that's what you really want to do, man.
Hey, who knows, man? I just spent 3 weeks in Europe doing some NBA basketball school. So not academy stuff, but they're starting these schools.
Yep.
And it was 2 weeks in Italy, 1 week in Poland, and just ABC 1, 2, 3 teaching fundamentals. Little Johnny teaching the jump stop and pivot and that kind
of
stuff.
Good to get back to that, isn't it? It's good.
Absolute blast. Oh my gosh. Shot in the arm. So
that's why my favorite camps every year is the kindergarten, first, second, third graders.
Because
they have so much energy and they bring it back and you're just teaching them how to jump stop and dribble right or left hand and they love it. And it brings it back to the true form. It really
honestly
does.
Yeah. And you celebrate the smallest little victories with them. Right. They travel on Monday and then by Thursday they're not traveling anymore.
So, Coach, I got to ask this too. I know we asked Sean, and I want to be able to flip it on to you here, but just the experiences, one, of course, having such a great tenure, such a great background, but then watching your players develop. I know a lot of coaches, I've only had it for coaching for a couple of years. It's one thing great to see your guys go on and do great things, and you've had it for a long enough time that you've got to be able to see not only people leave, but then ultimately come back to be an assistant. But on the flip side of things, your son, taking coaching roles. One in particular is now somebody who you got to battle against this past year. And I made sure to text him. I was like, you know, I'll be making sure to pay attention to the game. He goes, please don't. but just like seeing him now on the other side of things, of course, your other son being an assistant with you, just like talk about the experiences of seeing them grow, develop, and now being head coaches taking in your role too.
Yeah, I probably start crying on this podcast just because I'm proud of all my kids. I had two girls, two sons, and I'm proud of everything that they do. And they've all had a different experience in basketball, which I never forced on any of them. But to see Sean not only be a head coach now at a young age, but to go through the experiences that he went through to get there, to take the time to be, you know, the manager at Xavier, to then take a chance and move to Georgia and really kind of learn the experience. I'll be honest with you, and maybe Sean has shared this, but from the beginning, I told him college coaching's a different world. It's tough. And if you want to raise a family and be married in today's day and age, it's not something that is easy to do. I'm not saying you can't do it, but I think he needed to, and you got to go try it. You got to go experience it for yourself and make that decision for yourself. And for him to just do that, to just go away and to get out, to me, I was just a proud dad. And the fact that he came home and got a head job, and quite honestly, I've been trying to tell him to leave there and come back here and be my assistant, because, you know, I just want all the good guys with me. But I'm just, again, a proud, he's done it the right way. I try to stay out of it. I'm one of those guys, even when I coached both him and PJ when they played for me, our rule was always, I'm outside of the court, outside of here, I will never bring up basketball to you. You need to bring it to me if you have questions or concerns. And that worked as players. It's the same now as a coach. I just tell them, like, you have to form your own path and do things your way. But if you have questions or concerns or need anything, I'm here. And don't ever take that for me not caring or wish rooting against you. I'm going to kick your ass when we play. But that was a pretty intense pregame with my team about family and about not letting your kid beat you, that type of stuff. But I'm just proud first of him.
Play.
Yeah.
First play, lob up to the rim.
If I had a guy that could dunk last year, I would have.
I thought you were going to say you did have one of your guys do what Kobe did to Pau Gasol in the Olympics. Just like to have a kid run out of bounds and run right through Sean at the other end. He's going for the loose ball, but he wasn't, you know.
That was disgust. That was but no, I like with all my players, I really do. I have a pretty good coaching tree out there of former players, a few in the NBA, many in college, and a lot of high school guys. So I'm proud of that. But it obviously takes it to another level when it's your own son. And sons doing this, and it's such a great game, and it builds so much character, and you meet so many people and develop so many relationships that I'm glad that they went that route in some regard. Obviously, part of me wishes they would just get in the real world, make some money, and not have the headaches of coaching that are here today, but that's okay. And I just, again, I can't overstate the word proud of what he's done.
No, that's awesome. And I can even say I had a very minor stint of playing with him. It was only half a season when he transferred in from Gannon in my senior year. But the one thing I was mentioning too is every time he would come in, I loved playing with him. I mean, his stats, his career obviously speaks for itself. But then seeing Coach Flannery sitting courtside, and then I get the ball in my hands and I'm thinking, I'm like, crap. Like, especially normally people hide up there. He's always sitting front row right next to the, like, all right.
You guys got to understand, I didn't care. Like, I was just sitting there enjoying watching the game. I wasn't breaking things. I was just like, hey, dude, let's win a game. Let's go have some popcorn and enjoy it. But he is going to be, and probably he's way better of a coach, and his demeanor and his knowledge is way higher than mine was at his age. And I just think, and I hope he has a lot of success. I know being young coaches, everybody kind of worries about the wins and worry about those things. And there's no question, there's a lot of pressure to do that. But I think once you get to a point, that's not your concern, that you're just worried about making your players better, getting the most out of them every day. The results take care of themselves. And at some point, you're going to push through with wins because you're doing it the right way. My biggest thing to him is always just don't sacrifice who you are for a player or to try to win a game. You just can't do that. And if you want to be long-term in this job, you got to stick with your standards, your integrity, all of those things. I'll just share this real quick. One of the greatest lessons I learned as a young coach was from Morgan Wooten, who Doug may not know, but Morgan Wooten was the John Wooden of high school basketball. He was the head coach at DeMatha High School in Maryland. And he was a legend, and he was towards the end of his career. And I was obviously 23 years old, and we played them in a tournament down in Myrtle Beach. They were nationally ranked. We were nationally ranked. And he walked down to me before the game tipped off, and he just said, hey, you look like a really young coach. I'm happy for you. This is great. I'm just going to give you one line of advice for you. And I'm like sitting there like a little puppy. What is it? And he just said, if you don't like coaching the kid, don't coach him. And I was like, well, that's a little arrogant, or that's a little opposite of what. And he's my best player is at home right now, because the things that we believe in, he didn't. And I needed to make a message that I'm not telling you to give up on the kid. I'm just telling, don't coach him. So sit him on the bench. Don't dress him. Don't play him. But that's going to get to him quicker than anything else that you can do as a coach. And listen, that's third. That my first loss as a high school coach was to Morgan Wooten and DeMatha. And I use that as a, that's like a banner thing. Like, that guy's a legend. And here I am 30 years later, and I still live by and remember what that guy told me, one-liner before a game that I'll never forget. So you never know the impact you're going to have on people. You never know what you're going to say and how it's going to affect other people. And that's something that always just kind of sticks in the back of my mind, and something that I do. If a kid, I just tell myself, I'm not going to sacrifice this game or this season because this kid's good. Like, he's got to buy into what everybody else is doing. Otherwise, I'm going to lose this whole team in a couple of weeks or a couple of days. And I think we all get into that. We all want to win. We all, hey, I got to play my best guys. I got to do this. But at some point, you got to take a stand as a coach and stand up for what's important to you.
Oh, man. If that doesn't put a bow on it, I don't know what does. That's that's awesome. No, I mean, that's so true. You just want to lay your pillow on, head on the pillow each night to have that great peace of mind, that because you lose yourself as well. And you, not only you lose your team, you lose your you get lost in the wash with that. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, we've done it too. Like, I sit here and say that's what we're supposed to do, and I live by that. But there are games or days where I'm going to play this guy. I'm going to play him. I'll deal with it later. So we do it, but we got to make sure that we follow up and get back and make sure that we have our standards. If you're going to do this a long time, you just have to have a belief that you stick with and a belief that you understand is right. And I think that's one of the things I try to tell younger coaches is, don't be afraid to be wrong and don't be afraid to experiment. Like, I grew up being a Bobby Knight guy, like watching his offense and watching what he did. And like, I thought I had to act like him, like a screamer, like a tough guy. And I realized that's not me, man. That's not who I am. And so why am I going to act like him? And I'm not comfortable in that. And if you feel like your team needs to play a certain way, there is nothing wrong with experimenting and trying different things to make your team better. Just because Joe Blow or Roy Williams runs this defense and that's what I am, you have to learn to change your identity once in a while and adapt to your players. And one of the things that has kept me in this for so many years is what I love about high school basketball and being here is every single year is different. Every year is a challenge. We get kids that, whether they might be on your varsity as sophomores, but because of the age that they're at, they change so much for those 2-3 years that they might be a totally different player the next year. And your roster changes. This isn't the NBA where you got guys for 10 years or five. Like, we only have these guys for short windows, and every year it's a different challenge. And if I'm the guy that's going to tell them you have to play this way, I'm not going to be very good. Like, I have to look at what I have and adjust. Hey, this is the standards and this is what we typically do. But you know what? Maybe I need to slow things down because we can't run, or maybe I need to speed things up because we're pretty fast. You have to be able to change a little bit in what you do and your philosophy in order to just keep growing and succeeding. And if it means reaching out to other coaches and talking and saying, hey, I'm going to put my ego aside a little bit here. I love what you're doing. Can you tell me a little bit about it? That's how you get better. And coaching is stealing, right? We steal from everybody. We don't invent the wheel. But you have to be able to go outside of your comfort zone, as we all say, and become a better coach if that's what makes your team better.
Yeah, you know what? I'll let real quick last story, then Dougie can land the plane. But going into our last David West senior year at Xavier, he had done everything except be National Player of the Year. So that kind of became our battle cry, POY, be National Player of the Year. And I'm like, okay, who can I call to help me get this guy better? And Mike Budenholzer at the time is in San Antonio. He sends me a 21-minute, don't laugh, Doug, DVD of all Tim Duncan. Because that was David's favorite player. So Dave, we structured his skill development going into his senior year around a lot of the things in this video, because that's stuff that he was eventually going to have to do. But you're right. Like, I had to, me just saying, oh yeah, I got this, I'll get Dave better, don't worry about it. No, I had to go reach somewhere else. Here's the beauty of David West. Fast forward to 2017, I go visit him in Golden State, and they're playing the Spurs, ironically, in the first round of the playoffs. We go have lunch in Oakland. And I said, Dave, you remember that 21-minute DVD that Budenholzer sent you before your senior year? He goes, yeah, coach, I still got it. I watch it every now and then.
That's why he's a stud. He was a stud.
And this was year 15 Correct. Of him being in the NBA. So if, for those of you that think players don't help you get better, because the gun was to my head, you got to get this guy better somehow. Yep. But it was such a fun partnership because the great ones want to be coached. That's good at stuff. The end of the day. They love being coached.
Yep.
But Coach, we usually wrap it up by asking one question. And to be honest with you, if you have something else, but you've just hit the nail on the head for majority of them. And the question is usually just like any advice you'd share with your younger self, being able to get in the profession and grow in the profession. But I know you just covered that towards the end. But if there was anything else you wanted to throw in, feel free.
No, I appreciate you guys having me. I think we touched on so much, and I could talk for another 2 hours. But yeah. I think the last message, and we've already touched on it, is one of the things I learned as a young coach I know now that, and we just said it, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to lose. And your players are, and I'm sure you've touched on this before, your players are always going to remember how you made them feel. They're not going to remember how much they played. They're not going to remember how many points they scored. They're going to come back and visit you based on how you made them feel. And I have guys over 30 years, I would say 90%, 95% of my guys come back. We keep in touch. And there's always some that don't. And those are the ones that I regret, because there's probably a time where maybe I didn't make them feel welcome or what have you. And it happens, but it's okay. You can't please everybody. You're never going to do that. You have to stick with what you do, but always just remember, it's not as much about what you think it is. It's not the X's and O's. It's not the making them happy in the moment and playing time. It's just how you make them feel. Be honest, be yourself. Don't lie to kids. Don't tell them something they're not. Be as truthful as you can. If you do those things, I think you're going to be pretty successful. And talent helps. There's no question, always. But to what Coach Major said too, you want to sleep at night. You want to look yourself in the mirror. And over 30 years, I think I've done that. And that's why I'm still doing it. And that's why I hope I got another 15 or 20 in me. So hopefully we can do this again in a few years.
No, this is awesome, man. Don't mess with happy. That's my that's a St. Ed's motto right there, man.
I already wrote that down, Coach.
Don't mess with happy. Like no, that's awesome. No, Coach, listen, so good to see you again. It's been way too long. If I ever find myself in the area for whatever reason,
we're here.
I would love to duck in and see you, man. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Coach. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate you guys.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And for everybody out there, that does it for another episode, tying it up, Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Coach Flannery, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, thank you all. Keep working and keep rising, coaches. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. Thank you.